They were giving me a hard time because I yawned and said, what are the rest of us going to do? I don't know. I wasn't yawning because I was bored or anything. It just came, just like that. Oh, my goodness. How you doing? Bob, good to see you. I thought of you this week. Good to see you. Well, more than just this week, but this week specifically, yeah. Yeah, good to see you. Attitude. You know, sometimes when we glance at a person, you know, one of the things that we intuitively check out is attitude, right? I mean, if you walk into a school class, one of the things that you do is you look at your teacher and what is her or his attitude today, right? Because that might determine what kind of a day you have is what kind of an attitude they have. Our attitude either advances our cause or it gets us in trouble, right? Either helps us out or it ruins us. Our attitude affects every part of our life. Right? You know it's true. It starts when we get up in the morning, right? How many men get up, you know, you want to fix your wife coffee, you want to do everything. One is you get out of bed very quietly. My wife says, I don't, but I try, okay? And you get out of bed very quietly, and you don't want to disturb her because it, you know, it's really beneficial to the entire family if mom wakes up on the right side of the bed, right? That's a subtle word for attitude, okay? And, Ron has the attitude? Oh, yeah. So it takes a while, about 3 cups of coffee before he gets that caffeine attitude, right? Our attitude may attract people to us, or our attitude may send them scurrying in fear, right? And sometimes we giggle at that. But it's an attitude that we have. How many children have said to their brother or sister, they're about to run in the house for the 15th time, mom's just mopped the floor for the 40th time, and little brother's going to go run in the house, and he grabs a doorknob, and his big sister says to him, I wouldn't go in if I were you. Mom is in a bad mood. She has an attitude issue related to her children. It's a circumstantial attitude problem. We often say that person has a what? Attitude. We'll leave it good or bad. Some people, you know, when they say they have an attitude, we might, you know, sometimes it is positive, but oftentimes when we say they have an attitude, it's not complimentary. Okay, let's just put it that way. Maturity is marked by a person who has a consistent, gentle, attractive attitude in all circumstances. Now, if you get this, I don't have to preach the rest of the sermon. If you would just buy this sentence, I could just quit right here. Okay? So let me do it again. Maturity is marked by the person who has a consistent and gentle, attractive attitude in all circumstances. Isn't it interesting how it is natural for us to blame our attitude on our circumstances? Isn't it interesting? Somebody says, wow, did you not, you know, you come dashing into the office late or whatever, into the schoolroom or whatever it is that you do. And somebody looks at you and say, wow, did you have a rough morning? Yes, I did. And don't talk to me. Okay? What we're saying there is I had a rough morning, therefore I have every justification in the world to have what? A bad attitude. Look out. Okay? Here I am because my circumstances do that. And we all do that. It just depends on what trips your particular trigger, right? Huh? Yeah. Everybody has, you know, this trigger that goes off under certain circumstances. And we laugh at everybody else because, you know, their trigger goes off at a different thing. But the truth of it is, we are all very much plagued by our attitude, which we blame on our circumstances. Now, we teach our children, just because you're sick doesn't mean you can be grumpy. But of course, when we're sick, we're what? Everybody, we're grumpy, all right? Everybody knows that. But we know what is the right thing, but we often justify our attitude, our bad attitude, because of our circumstances. We tend to blame everything on our circumstances. Our attitude comes, though, from within. It's not circumstantial. The circumstances just put our heart to the test on whether we're going to have a good attitude or not. When we first got married and we didn't have any money and we're up in Alaska here, we're buying property and doing that stuff, we lived with my folks. And my dad just loved testing my wife in the morning to see what kind of an attitude she would have. And he found out right away, my dad was a great cook and all that, but he was kind of sloppy, to say the least. And he dirtied lots of dishes, and there might be a few things on the floor. And one of the things that he often would do is drop ice or water on the floor, and then she would step on it her bare feet, and she'd kind of scream out, you know, at him. And he just thought that was hilarious. So then he started putting those on purpose in the kitchen floor just to see what kind of a day it was going to be. Okay, and so they had this little thing going, and it's kind of interesting because are your circumstances going to determine your attitude? Well, you know what? Your attitude doesn't come from ice on the floor. Your attitude comes from within here. And if we want to change our attitude, we got to change what is in here, because that's where the problem lies, not the externals. That's only a test of what is in here. I want you to open your Bibles to Philippians chapter 4. Better not go backwards. We need to go forward. Philippians chapter 4. And we're going to start with verse 2. But let me bring the conclusion together, and that is verse 1 of chapter 4. He says now, therefore, my brothers, you whom I love and long for, my joy and crown, that is how you should stand firm or be mature in the Lord. So he talks about these things that help create maturity in our life, stability, so that we don't have these triggers when certain things happen in our life, that our heart is prepared to react in a certain predictable way. And so verse 2 says, I plead with Yodia and Syntyche to agree with each other in the Lord. Yes, and I ask you, loyal yoke fellow, probably the pastor here, may even been his proper name, help these women who have contended at my side in the cause of the gospel, along with Clement and the rest of my fellow workers whose names are in the book of life. So that one of the first thing that Paul deals with kind of at the conclusion of his letter here is there are two dear ladies that are not getting along. Now, we don't know what really was taking place. I suspect that they were probably involved in some ministry in the church, and they had a difference of opinion as to how they were going to approach that. And they were just godly people. These might have been two of the ladies that Paul first prayed with and worshiped with by the riverbank as he came and started the church at Philippi. We don't know. What we do know is Paul dearly loved these ladies. And his relationship with them allowed him to mention their name publicly. Okay, he wasn't doing that to rebuke them or embarrass them. He had a relationship with them, and everybody knew it. And it's interesting that he brings it out and says to the pastor, help these ladies come to an agreement, okay, and work it out. These are good ladies. They've helped me in the gospel in so many ways. So Paul loves these ladies, and he wants them to work it out. He wants them to show maturity. One of the things that you will find about attitude is your attitude will affect your relationships. See, if you have a good attitude, people will want to be around you. You have a bad attitude, what? Everybody's running for cover. So attitude has everything to do with our relationships, and Paul understood that. He was concerned, first of all, that the agreement, that the disagreement among these ladies would affect the harmony of the entire church. Because what do? We often, we just feel our obligation to take sides. Notice Paul didn't take sides. He didn't blame one or the other. He said, you guys work it out. I remember when our children got a little bit older and they come, you know, I want you to, and tell them to quit. And my usual response to that, listen, you guys work it out because you won't want me to work it out. Okay? So you guys can work it out or I can work it out later, but you determine which you want. And usually they like to work it out among themselves. And by the way, I said, you have to work it out in a way that both of you are satisfied. Otherwise, I'm coming in to finish the job. So you work it out. Okay? And it teaches them how to deal with issues that don't necessarily work out the way that you want, but you can go on with life and you can smile. Okay? And so these are very important. So Paul didn't want the church to be divided between these two ladies taking sides. That's not maturity. And the second thing, Paul loved these ladies and he could speak directly to them and he wanted them to actually get back with the program and to work out their differences. These two ladies were very vital in the church. They were probably hardworking. They're probably a Mary and Martha, you know, kind of deal. But they both had different ways of doing things, and they were just struggling with that. So what do we do about our relationship with other people in regard to our attitude? A couple things I want you to note. Humility is a great starting place in our attitude. Okay, especially when it comes to relationships. Being humble means that it doesn't have to go my way or to my specifications or anything like that. It means that I can give in to the other person. It's perfectly okay. Everything doesn't have to go my direction. Secondly, amazing things can happen when you really don't care who gets the credit. Amazing things can happen when you don't care who gets the credit. When you have to get the credit and you have to stand in the limelight, it's your decision and your production, so to speak, then, you know, yeah, attitudes run south in that particular case. If those around you will not take sides, it kind of calms an otherwise explosive situation. So one of the things you do when two people aren't getting along is one thing, it doesn't do any good to take sides. Now, one may be more in the wrong than the other, but that's not the point. The point is they both need to come to an agreement and be humble enough to give in to the other person. And so attitude will affect our relationships. So we need to keep our attitude in check. And that starts in our heart, not our circumstances. The second thing that Paul says is verse 4, rejoice in the Lord always. I will say it again, rejoice. So he's emphasizing, and it's imperative, he's commanding these believers to rejoice, not in their circumstances, but in the Lord. Rejoice in the Lord. I'll say it again, rejoice. Verse 5, let your gentleness be evident to all, the Lord is near. So he says that our attitude should be one of rejoicing. So your attitude will affect your joy. Okay? You fall out of bed. That's your experience first thing in the morning. Okay? And so that can, if you have a bad attitude, that can give you a bad attitude. And that can set the tone for the entire day. And you know what? Let's be honest. Sometimes our day starts out lousy and it ends lousy, right? I mean, it just seems like it all stacks up in one day. I mean, what else bad could happen in one day? All right. But it still has to do. We can have joy in spite of our circumstances. And so Paul says, I want you to rejoice in the Lord, not your circumstances, not your bad day, not whatever happened to you. Your bank account is empty. But I want you to know that Jesus Christ is worth having joy and worth having a good attitude. Okay, no matter what your other circumstances might be, you can always say, why should I be happy today? Okay, everything else has gone bad. And Paul says, because you know the Lord. Okay, you still have him. And that is a reason to rejoice. Our joy finds its source in the Lord and not in our circumstances. To rejoice is not an option. It's a responsibility that we have as mature believers in Jesus Christ. How can we rejoice in view of life's disappointments? There's plenty in life that is difficult and disappointing. Paul is not ignoring that. He's in prison as he writes this. Okay? So he's not, you know, living the life of luxury and preaching to those that are struggling. Paul is in the worst possible situation. He doesn't know whether he's going to be executed or whether he's going to be released. In the meantime, he's in prison. So Paul is not neglecting the fact that life can be tough and life can be disappointing. And life just rushes in on us with these things. Paul is not ignoring that. He was not immune to sorrow or blind to life's problems, but Paul had experienced joy by focusing his attention on Christ rather than on his circumstances. He said, rejoice in the Lord. That is, you still have him. He is still the same God. He is a God worth rejoicing over. And so Jesus is greater than anything that life might throw at us, period. So we can rejoice in spite of these things. In fact, it is interesting, as Paul writes this, he says, rejoice in the Lord, that these believers no doubt could think back of the experience of, with Paul, of being locked up for sharing the gospel in Philippi, in the Philippian jail. And as he was beaten, Paul and Silas were beaten, they were thrown in that jail. And at midnight, I mean, you can't sleep when you've got your back beaten, right? And so what were they doing? Well, they were there in jail complaining that Jesus hadn't rescued them. No, they weren't complaining. What were they doing? They were singing hymns, driving everybody crazy. Okay? And then the Lord sent an earthquake and the doors flung open and the jailer thought that everybody escaped and so he's going to get killed, so he's going to kill himself. And Paul said, don't fall on your sword. We're all here. And that began a revival in Philippi that was still going on as Paul wrote. Because the Philippian jailer and his whole household and his neighbors and everybody came and Paul presented the gospel to them. And you imagine this, they all accepted Jesus Christ. Listen, anybody who can rejoice in that circumstances knows something that I don't know. Why was Paul rejoicing? Because his back was bleeding and hurting? No. He wasn't rejoicing because he could feel every heartbeat on his back from the wounds that he had. That wasn't what he was rejoicing about. He was rejoicing that he was connected to and knew Jesus Christ. And so when he writes this, these folks either have heard that story or experienced it with Paul personally. And so they knew what he was talking about here. And it was real for them. And so he uses an interesting word here. Paul doesn't use this, or I don't think it's used anywhere else in the New Testament. It's a very interesting word. It's just, in English, it just comes out a very common word, and that's in verse 5. Let your gentleness be evident to all. Now, he says, rejoice in the Lord, and again, I say, rejoice. Let your gentleness be known to all. See, your attitude will affect your joy. How do you have a right attitude? It's a heart change. What kind of a heart change do you need? Paul says gentleness is a key to this. Now, this word gentleness is a word that has to do not just with being gentle as we think about, but it's a word that's just packed with meaning. Let me describe it a little bit if I can. The word gentleness here means yielding, okay? A person that is yielding to another, a person who is kind, or a person who is lenient. You know what? You're going to pay for that. Okay, that's not lenient. Okay, that means they're going to extract from you every nickel or every situation. You're going to pay for that. Okay, so the word for gentleness is not at all like that. It's the word for being lenient to others. You go first. Okay, that kind of idea. And of course, it comes across in English as being a gentle person rather than an aggressive person or a person that has to be in line first, that sort of thing. It's interesting. Pulled up, you know, to Essential One, you know, to dump our camper the other day. And there's a guy washing his car. Where you're supposed to be getting fresh water for your camper and dumping your sewer. There was a certain part of my anatomy wanted to go tell him what he could do with his dirty car. But I didn't. Because there's another part of my anatomy that does have a gentle spirit and wants to do what is Christ-like. Besides that, he could show up in the church here on Sunday. He might even be here Sunday. So I'm talking about it. So you got to think about these things. So I pull over and wait patiently in line as he washes his car. Not at the car wash, but. But I didn't want to be rude, so I didn't pull right up to him. Isn't God funny? And a guy in a white Chevy pickup, all fancy, but mud on his too. I don't know if they're together. What? He pulls in front of me and takes the hose from the other guy and washes his car all off. My wife was there. I'm not making this up. You can't make this stuff up. So I sent her back there to talk to him. Because I didn't want to be sinful. I said, it's okay if she sinned. If she has to confess before God, that's her problem. You know what I'm saying? Actually, she was very kind to him, represented Jesus well, but okay. On the exterior, I passed the test pretty well. Interior, Jesus and I are still working on that, okay? As you can tell. But that's good. I don't have to apologize to somebody. I don't have to apologize to the Lord. I just still think the guy was an idiot, right? How many of you think he was an idiot? Okay? I'm sorry, Lord. He was an idiot, okay? And so Jesus is working on me on that one. I'm sure he was a wonderful person. But what an idiot. Anyway, okay. So gentleness. Gentleness. It's okay. I know I came in. I'm ready for bed. I don't need an idiot. Two idiots getting in front of me. I mean, let's just justify this a minute. If one idiot steps in front of you, Jesus says, be gentle. Two step in front of you, something's got to be done. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? I mean, God can't put us to that big of a test, right? Gentleness. Yielding. Giving in to. It's okay. I'm still alive. Willingness to experience an unfair situation without hatred or bitterness. Don't you say that again? The willingness to experience an unfair situation without hatred or bitterness, without getting a bad attitude. That's gentleness. We are often robbed of joy because of our unyielding nature. Somebody's got to tell them, right? Somebody's got to straighten them out for everybody else. We have all these justifications. None of them really pass mustard with God. Notice he goes on in verse 6. Do not be anxious about anything. But in everything, by prayer and petition with thanksgiving, present your request to God. And the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. You see, this whole attitude affects our joy. And Paul says there's some remedies. I've learned some things about this. One is, rejoice in the Lord, not in the disappointments in life. That's idiotic. I'm so glad I got beat last night for Jesus. No, that's idiotic. Okay? That's not what God is saying. I can rejoice in the Lord in spite of the hardships that have come my way or the disappointments that are in my life. I can still rejoice in the Lord. He's rejoiceable no matter what the situation. So Paul says you can focus on that. Then he said, you need to get a right heart attitude because you're going to be tested as to how mature is your heart. God will not only put one idiot in front of you, he'll put two. And if you need three, he'll put three there. Because he wants to know your heart. You say that you have a good attitude. It's not circumstantial, that it's a part of your DNA. He might put you to the test. Because he wants to know our heart. He wants us to know our heart. Well, prayer, as Paul says, can change everything about our heart. It can shore us up. It can make us stronger in situations when we pray. What we do is we don't take on our problems just by ourselves, but we take on our problems in the power of God. So Paul says, don't be anxious, rather pray. Now that's hard. When I preach on things like this, I don't even want to be hypocritical. I find when I was younger, worry was not as big an issue. As I get older, I find that it's more difficult. I don't know why that is. It's just dumb. But that's, as we get older, it seems like we worry about certain things. And so it is a struggle. But Paul says here, rather than worry, that doesn't accomplish anything. How many of us stayed up sleepless nights? You know, you wake up at 3 a.m, your mind wanders off on the problems of the next day. And how you lose 4 or 5 hours of sleep. How many problems were fixed during that period of time? You know, every once in a while, I come up with a great idea at 3 a.m. That's legit. I'm not saying there's nothing, but most of our worry accomplishes nothing. We still have to get up in the next morning. We have to suit up and we have to dive into that sewer pit, you know, into that septic tank, and we have to get sewer all over us and solve the problem, right? And we worried about that all night, but we might as well just suit up and do it, okay? But the point is guess what? When we suit up and dive in, God is with us in that. He doesn't leave us there alone. He doesn't giggle at us. He doesn't make fun of us. He's actually there with us. And so prayer is ensuring that God is with us in these difficult circumstances. It's great for God to say, it's okay, take a deep breath. You know, now I like it when God says, don't worry about it, I'll fix this, I'll tell this guy what to do, you know. That hose is going to come loose and make a scratch all the way down his car. See, isn't it interesting how we think? Well, maybe you don't think that, but that's how preachers think. Anyway, so it's not that we want God to get even with them. We want God to help us through the situation. Let God deal with the other people, the other circumstances. Prayer is our deliverance from the emotional weight of our problems and disappointments. Let me say that again. Prayer is our deliverance from the emotional weight of our problems and our disappointments. When I pray, I'm unloading my problems and my concerns over on God. Peter says, casting all your care upon him because he what? He's going to take care of you. He cares for you. Paul says, don't be anxious, but pray. And when we pray, God takes our anxieties and he gives us his peace, which transcends our problems and guards our heart and our mind against the debilitating worry and discouragement that is dominating us. See, look at what he says here. He says, don't be anxious, rather pray. Lift up prayers and petitions and thanksgiving. Notice thanksgiving is in that. That helps when we're praying and we're discouraged. It's good to bring thanksgiving in because it begins to change our attitude. Present your requests to God, and the peace of God, which transcends our understanding of things, will guard your heart against the anxieties that you have when you begin to pray. So prayer is a guard to the emotional part of our heart. And it puts all of these things in check so that we can deal with difficult and disappointing situations in life. Jesus Christ will be the focus of our mind and our heart because we've pointed our attention to prayer and requesting God. Paul goes on to say here, starting in verse 8, he says, your attitude will affect your ability to think clearly. You will not be able to think clearly if you have a bad attitude. Have you ever ran into a person that was extremely angry? Now, if you thought you were going to debate with that person, two fools just met. A person who is angry, men, when she's really hot under the collar, Ron, let it go. Let it go. You are not going to win. Now, there's a man with experience right here. Okay. Tell you. Your attitude will affect your ability to think clearly. Okay? We're talking about maturity. Attitude is a key to maturity. Attitude affects our relationships, but it affects how we think. Often we spend much of our time thinking things that do not encourage or shape our attitude in a positive way. Paul says in verse 8, finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, admirable, what is excellent, praiseworthy, think about such things. I don't know how many hundreds of times I've come back to this passage. Negative thoughts begin to dominate. And I hate that. I tell you, I've come back to this. Okay, think what is true. Think what is pure. You've got to change the way that your mind is going or it's not going to go well for you. You're really going to have a bad day. So you're going to have a bad day on top of a bad day because of your bad attitude. Bad attitude is not going to give you a better day. Say, it makes me feel better. It didn't make you feel better. You felt terrible. You were wallowing in self-pity. So Paul says, listen, think about what is true. If you're thinking on this list of things here, your attitude cannot be negative. And so Paul says, we need to think about that. Often we spend much of our time thinking about things that don't help us. Our attitude can guide the way that we think. Attitude can guide the way that we think. The way that we think can control our attitude. It works both ways. One affects the other. One of the first sermons I ever preached, I used this phrase here. The battles of the Christian life are won or lost in the mind. See, it's the struggle that goes on here determines the actions that are carried out. And so the battle, we need to win the battle in our heart and our mind, or we're going to lose it on the battlefield. We have to win it over in our mind and our heart first. And so Paul says, make sure that you win this battle by going into the battle with the right attitude, thinking on the things that will bring maturity to this situation, whatever it is that you're facing. We ought to think about what is true and noble and right and moral and pure and pleasing, lovely, admirable, excellent, and what is praiseworthy. What you wouldn't be ashamed of repeating later on. Isn't that interesting? No problem will be better because we think negatively. Have you ever had a person step up to help you, or maybe you've stepped up to help a person who their mind is just in a fog because of the frustration of trying to solve a particular problem but weren't able to solve it, and they're just so frustrated, and you come up and you come in with a different attitude because you haven't been overcome by these circumstances, and you say, if you do this, this, and that, it's not a big deal. And let me help you. And they're so relieved because they got so weighted down and so discouraged. And all of a sudden the situation just becomes, have you ever been in a situation where you thought it was just absolutely, totally impossible? It can't be done. And somebody comes up and says, let me help you. It can be done. But see, attitude just disabled us. Aligning our minds with Christ will give us a totally different perspective on life and its struggles. Our hope is not a change of circumstances. That may not happen. Our hope is in Christ. That is why we rejoice in the Lord, not in our circumstances. We should keep on thinking and doing what is spiritually excellent. If our thinking is dominated by negative or ungodly thoughts, we will be defeated by our own mind and heart. So the apostle says, grab onto the things that come from Christ, the mind of Christ and the heart of Christ. What is pure and moral and good and praiseworthy and excellent, noble. It'll change everything. It'll keep your attitude in check, going in the right direction. Then finally, he says this in verse 9. Look at it with me. Whatever you have learned or received or heard, so whatever you've learned, received, or heard, or saw in me, put it into practice, and the God of peace will be with you. Very interesting. Your attitude will affect your ability to learn from others. I was taking Hebrew class in seminary. Hebrew's kind of a different language from English, a little bit tough for some of us non-student types. And there was 4 Hebrew professors, and I signed up for the hardest one because I wanted to learn Hebrew. So I signed up for the hardest professor. Kind of stupid, but I did it because I wanted to learn Hebrew. And I didn't care what kind of grade I got in there. I wanted to learn Hebrew. And so I took Dr. Averbeck, who was the hardest of all of them. And oh my goodness, it was everything that I thought it was going to be. Okay? But I began to love Hebrew and I began to do fairly well. But man, he was such an egghead. I mean, I couldn't even understand half the words that he said that were in English, not even in Hebrew. And there was a guy from Singapore. He was a pastor. His name was Charlie. And his wife and kids had to stay back in Singapore. And he was getting his master's along with me. And I don't know how many languages he knew, but he knew a lot of them. And Hebrew was just another language, and it just absorbed it. Well, he was kind of lonely. I said, I need a tutor. My wife will fix you supper if you'll tutor me in Hebrew. He ate at our house a lot. And my grade in Hebrew class went from a C to a 4.0. Isn't that interesting? And you know what? It didn't bother me one bit that I was getting help from a fellow student. He was awesome. We struggle learning from others. Paul says, I want you to do something. I want you to look at how I've instructed you, okay, what you've received from me, learned and received, and I want you to think about what you've observed in me as you've watched me live my life. And then I want you to take what I've taught you and take what you've observed in my life, and I want you to live that way yourself. And, you know, we're fine with the Apostle Paul, who's dead and gone to glory, saying that to us. Okay, I'm going to try to set my example like the Apostle Paul. That's good. But, you know, the Apostle Paul, he's like Dr. Averbeck. He's kind of over my head. I need somebody that fleshes this out for me. I need somebody that explains the teaching to me, and I need somebody to tell me what that means to live it out in my life. I need a spiritual mentor. Did you know pastors need spiritual mentors? Now, what I do this week, I enlisted the help of a number of people on different subjects. I wanted their input because they're particularly gifted in this particular area. I wanted their input. It was still my decision to make, but I wanted their input. And I wasn't ashamed to ask for their help, and I wasn't ashamed to say, man, I don't have all the answers here. So I'm looking for your input on this particular subject. Here's the nasty little secret. I'm just going to give it to you straight, right? Not deluded. We look at the person sitting beside us, and we're not humble enough to say, they have some areas in their spiritual life that they're doing better than I am. We nitpick on them. We find flaws in their life that are just like ours, and we bring them down to our level. And there is no way that we're going to give any hint to them that they're going to help us spiritually. We live very critical towards one another. And that criticism is a roadblock to us learning principles, spiritual principles from them on how to live our life. You know what? None of us, I'm going to give you just a little bit of a surprise shock here. You ready for this? None of us are perfect. Is everybody okay? Everybody okay? The fact of it is, I'm going to learn from an imperfect person. But there's certain things in their life that are way better than what I'm doing. And I want to learn from them. I was launching my boat one day. It's a place where God can teach you about attitude. And there was a dear individual that obviously had a boat that was bigger than, his eyes were bigger than his stomach. It was about a 30-foot boat. And he had a big 8-foot camper on the back of a pickup. So the pickup was loaded like this, plus he had this heavy boat. And he starts backing down the ramp. And when he did, he couldn't steer because the front tires just slid back and forth like this. And he was going up and down the ramp, up and down the ramp. Everybody's waiting on him, but no, everybody knows you do not go over and say anything to a man, okay? finally, I went over there just as casually as I could, like I wasn't even going to talk to him. I didn't even look at him. I said, sir, if you will put that in neutral, you will be able to back down fine. Oh, man, he pulled up the ramp again and tried it 3 or 4 times. And I'm standing there. And then I saw him just take a quick glance over at me like this. And I saw him go like this. And he backed down the ramp just perfectly. Folks, that's where we are in life. We are complete idiots. And the only difference between us looking like the most intelligent people in the world and pure idiots is getting a little help from somebody else. That's it. Question, big question this morning, Pastor Rick's number one question. Do you want to be an idiot? Then don't seek help. Very simple, not complicated. But if you want to do something for God, Paul says, what you've seen and heard in me, what you've seen in me, put into practice. And you know what? We ought to be able to say that to everybody around us in some way or other. We're not perfect. We have areas that we need to grow in. Those areas, we ought to get help in. Not be afraid to get help. Hebrews 13 says, we are to imitate the faith of spiritually mature people. And that's the worship team to come forward here as I'm finishing. 2 Corinthians 11, Paul says, follow my example as I follow Christ. He says to Timothy, Timothy, you set the example for the believers. You see, we are to set an example. And one of the things we've talked about this morning is our attitude. And wouldn't it be great if we can learn from people about attitude? Because in certain circumstances, that's our trigger. We lose it. Other circumstances, we hold on to our attitude. So in some circumstances, we can teach one person. In another circumstances, we can be taught by a person. And gentleness means that it doesn't matter where we learn it or how we learn it, as long as we learn it. That's the only thing that matters. Wouldn't it be great if people said of you, wow, that person always has a great attitude. Let's stand as we sing.